Everyone can tell what it is, but how do you get it? With so many styles of music, with new gear coming out almost daily, what's the secret to great tone? Welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show, where we talk about tone, what it is, and how to get it. With your hosts, Jeff Floro and Scott Sill, we will talk to the creators of tone, the manufacturers, and the players, as we explore tone and the gear that gets it. And now, here are your hosts, Jeff Floro and Scott Sill.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show. I'm Jeff, and I'm here with Scott, and it's a beautiful, warm evening here out in the valley.
Yeah, it's been a beautiful 101 degrees, so it's been great. Loving it. So, Jeff, what's been going on with you on your music side?
Actually, I'll be posting some pictures up soon. I got a 212 cabinet that I had put together, and I just installed those Celestians in there, so I'm going to test those out. I've been working on that and some wiring.
That should be a lot of fun to see what that sounds like.
Yeah, those Celestians would sound nice.
Yeah. Well, I just ended up getting some great new products from Vibramate coming in, a string spoiler, which is a fantastic little device to help you string your Bigsby made guitar very quickly and easily. So especially if you're a gigging musician and love Bigsby's, then a string spoiler is probably something you might want to look into. So I'll be doing a demo video on that, and then they also sent me one of their new...
Yeah, that's the thing. You don't have to coil the...
Yeah, you don't have to bend the strings.
Yeah, I have those on my Les Pauls. Those are great.
Yeah, so that's...
They work really well.
So I'll be doing a demo video on that and then showing off another new product. There's the new Super Grip, which is just what looks to me like if you have sweaty hands or, again, a live musician, it sounds like that's an easy way to grab the whammy bar without really it slipping. So we'll take a look at that pretty soon on some videos on my YouTube channel.
That should be fun, yes.
So, and just to announce, we will have a giveaway next week with Eminence Speakers. We should have a speaker giveaway. And also, speaking of giveaways, we will be talking about one with our guest that we have today. To remind everybody, if you would please call 323-203-0815, 323-203-0815, to call and talk to Brian Wampler, our guest, coming up, and ask any questions you like, or you can join our chat room on our website, www.flowguitarenthusiast.com. So, without further ado, I can't speak today. It's 101 degrees. It's fried my brain. Anyways, let's bring on our guest, Brian Wampler. So he is the owner of Wampler Pedals, company that started in 2006. And I actually got introduced to them by seeing some demos actually on YouTube by an Aussie down in Australia, Brett Kingman. So mm-hmm. I started to see some of the stuff that he was doing with it. Thought it was quite some very classy, very good pedals. So. And then I saw them at the LA Amp show. So welcome, Brian. Thanks for coming on the show.
Well, thanks for having me.
So can let's get started. Let's talk about, in your bio, you talk about how you were a guitarist and a studio musician before you got into making pedals. Can you talk mm-hmm. about what you did there and what kind of studio work you did?
Well, never anything like really serious, like any major label stuff, but just a lot of, small home studios and a lot of bar bands, and did a little bit of work in Nashville on Broadway, and also trying to pursue that whole dream of getting a record deal in Nashville. Really for years, I've been playing since I was a kid, and that's really kind of what started the whole thing, is my pursuit of trying to find this guitar tone that I just could not get with the gear I had.
And so were you, when you were having those issues, were you determining whether it was an amp problem, a guitar problem? What narrowed it down to where a pedal might be able to solve that problem for you?
It really kind of in every area. I went through, just like every other guitar player, tons of amps, tons of guitars, tons of different pedals, all different kinds of gear you can imagine. I guess what led me to doing anything with pedals at the time was finances, really, more than anything. But, you know, now that, I mean, I have a ton of amps, pedals are still where my heart is. I mean, I still use a lot of different amps, but I still just love messing with pedals.
So what kind of guitars and amps did you play before you got into the pedal making, and then what are you using now?
I have a bunch of different stuff. I have several Les Pauls, a bunch of Tellys, a couple Strats, and I do have a Schecter as well. But really, my main guitar I use is usually going to be a Telecaster. If it's more of like a rock type gig, then I'll use my Les Paul usually. Amp wise, it really just depends on the gig and my mood that night. I mean, I may use a Dr. Z one night. I also have a Port City that I really love a lot. I use a lot of amps by Shaw Amps out of Tennessee as well, and he does just a lot of great, very unique EF86 type amps. So there's really not one particular thing I'm stuck on. It's just whatever strikes me that day.
Very cool. So, and one of the things you talk about is that you had a buddy that started to help you modify a pedal, if I'm correct, right? Can you talk about that, and then talk about when you realized that you wanted to get into the electronic side, how did you study and start learning how to work on pedals?
Well, at the very first, I had a friend of mine. I kind of met him over the internet through a gear forum, and it just happened that he lived fairly close to me, so we'd get together and just, you know, play and goof around. And he gave me a modified DS1, a Boss DS1 he'd modified. And I was, you know, playing tons of DS1s over the years, obviously. I was pretty intrigued that it sounds so drastically different. And so just asking him, I asked what he did to it and how, you know, he got those different tones. And he just said he learned, he found some mods on a site called DIYStompBoxes.com. And just did a couple simple changes, and that's what it ended up with. So I've always kind of been a hands-on type of guy. So I was just completely intrigued that with, you know, a couple of dollars worth of parts and a soldering iron, you can take a pedal that sounded completely, drastically different than what you wanted it to be and turn it into that, and turn it into the tone that you had in your head, just by changing some parts and some circuitry. So kind of in a very geeky, nerdy way, I guess. that excited me early on. So, I didn't start out wanting to have any sort of job or anything. It was just all for myself. I had a lot of cheaper pedals, and I figured, well, I mean, I can read blueprints. A schematic can't be that hard, you know, much harder. So I just kind of did what he did. He started on DIY Stomp Boxes, and I read through there and found some resources that some different sites and some different books that were recommended to learn electronics. But really from the very first, what I really did was just tinker around. I would just change parts out and see what happened just for the fun of it. Just purely as a hobby, really.
So is that what you would recommend if somebody was looking into modifying pedals or getting kind of into something like this? You would recommend just kind of starting out with like a do-it-yourself pedals doing the same thing, just pulling out parts and swapping them out, see what happens.
I think it kind of depends on the person, really. I was one of those types of people that didn't really ever want to be in school, let alone college. And me going to any sort of electronics course and getting a degree in electronics was probably not going to happen, and I knew that right away. So I learned way better just by trying things and learning what doesn't work and what does work, and then figuring out why that stuff worked. Some people are the total opposite. For example, I have a couple guys for me that are in, they actually go to Purdue and are in electronics engineering, and they're the complete opposite from me. It works good because I'm teaching them the way I learned, and they find it very unique to kind of learn from your ears first rather than from a pencil and a piece of paper. So it kind of depends on the person, really. I don't think there's one complete absolute path that must be followed. Everybody's going to be a little bit individual.
So when did this turn in from a hobby into a business, and how did you actually create Wampler?
That's a good question. I don't know the exact date. I mean, it was a little bit of a time, at a time, really. I mean, 2001-ish or so, 2002, somewhere in that neighborhood. I was doing modifications for people on Harmony Central effects form at that time, which at that time they actually talked about pedals. They don't talk a whole lot about pedals anymore in that forum, but I would just do some simple modifications on pedals, and sometimes for trade for another pedal, or sometimes they'd pay me a couple dollars to do it for them. Other times they would just ask me how I did it, and I would, you know, tell them how I did that. And that's really what segued me into where I am now. I found out at that time that what I got a lot more of was people that were asking me how I was doing the modifications I was doing. And I started just answering a lot of email regarding that. And it was taking up so much time, I thought, I'm going to have to figure out a way to at least be paid for my time to do this, because this is taking me, you know, an hour and a half, 2 hours a night to do. So I basically just wrote a couple little simple PDF documents with some pictures and explained, you know, change on this circuit board, change C3 to 0.01 microfarad or something like that. Just, you know, very rudimentary explanation of how to do the modifications. And I just kept getting people asking me for more detail and more detail. And what that ended up is me writing kind of a self-released book, a self-published book, about modifying effects, and another one on building effects, and then I later came out with another one about like an advanced DIY type of building effects, designing effects. I don't publish those anymore. I am going to re-release the one on modifications, though. We're actually at the tail end of that edit, but that really kind of segued me into like a customer base and kind of getting known a little bit within, you know, people more into boutique pedals. And that, from there, they started asking me, okay, well, you do the modifications and stuff. Would you be willing to do me a custom pedal? Would you be willing to design or build me one? And I did some of that for a while, and I started noticing that I was getting retailers asking me if I had any pedals that I would be willing to sell as a line. And so I really just kind of stumbled my way all the way through it.
Interesting. So, this usually we ask these sort of questions at the end of the show about the future, but just out of curiosity, do you ever have any plans of doing a do-it-yourself Wampler pedal, since that's kind of how you got started?
I would say it's never going to be out of the picture completely. As of right now, this very second, I don't have a plan on it, but that may change in a year, 5 years, or whatever. You know, as far as the future, I'm really kind of a fly by the seat of my pants type of person. We may start doing, I don't know, baby monitors in 5 years. Who knows? I mean, if people stop buying our guitar pedals, I'm sure a door opens somewhere and that'll segue into something else. But my intentions right now is just to keep doing what we're doing and attempt to do it better than our competition.
Well, so what was your first pedal that you commercially released as Wampler?
First pedal, I think, if I recall, was like, I think it was a Pinnacle. It's different than the Pinnacle, than what the Pinnacle is right now. This Pinnacle had two different channels. It was actually much more like the Hotwired. It had two different independent channels. And it's, I don't know. I didn't sell too many of those. I probably sold 50 or 60 of them overall. Mm-hmm. And then I changed that circuit completely, and that became the Pinnacle as it is now.
Which is your brown note sound.
It's kind of like an EVH brown sound type of thing. So it's in fact, if you check out some of the clips, and I think you guys have a clip of the Pinnacle, you can really hear that it nails that eddy tone.
Let me go ahead and play that right now, since we're talking about it. Here's the Pinnacle. That's pretty nice. Let me ask you, though, something. When you were... before you even started tinkering around with your pedals, Mm-hmm. Were you really into get your sound when you were doing the earlier session gigs and stuff? Were you using pedals more, or were you cranking the amps more and using different amps?
At that time, probably more pedals. At that era of my life, that was kind of really like full tone. I just kind of hit on the scene. Mm-hmm. And I was a big fan of the full tone stuff, but at that time I couldn't really afford a whole lot of it. But I really like that sound of like a really good sounding tube amp that's just on the verge of clean, and then using pedals to drive it. Mm-hmm. And keep in mind, I'm primarily more of like a chicken picking type of player too. So I'm probably not going to use like a Mesa Boogie or anything like that. But that's kind of how I approached it from. It's kind of like at that time, I think I had probably a Deluxe Reverb or a Hot Rod DeVille or some sort of Fenderish type of amp like that.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, like for you to, you know, I mean that just clip that right now with that mm-hmm. Pinnacle pedal. That sound is pretty much known as an amp just cranked. So when mm-hmm. you were, as you later on, when you started making these pedals and stuff, did you experiment more with just cranking up amps to get that tone and see what that tone was about? Or?
Oh, yeah, I see what you mean. Yeah, yeah.
You know,
I mean, like when I'm designing something, I always have the amp, or if it's, like, for example, we just did this Voxy pedal, Vox-inspired pedal, and so I have a bunch of Vox type amps. I have a couple regular AC30s. We had AC15, and then a couple different clones that just sound really good. And just trying to emulate that tone. At that time, for example, that sound, that was just a combination of sound clips. A couple friends of mine had amps that I thought really nailed that sort of sound. Mm-hmm. And they would let me borrow them. And so I was just always playing the amp and then going back to the breadboard. Which that's like this little configuration that allows me to assemble a circuit really quick, playing through it without soldering it or anything. So I was just designing on this breadboard and playing through the amp and just trying to match the two up.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a bit of a knack to it as well. For some reason, I've always been one of those types of people who can hear really crazy frequencies. Like, for example, if I hear feedback, if I'm playing with a band, for example, I can tell you just about what frequency needs to be cut. And I don't know why, I didn't have any training, but for some reason it's almost like a color to me.
Mm-hmm.
So I've always been really good at that sort of thing. I've always had a pretty good set of ears. And I really think that's just the basis of it, really.
Mm-hmm. Now, you've made so many pedals that emulate amps. What do you recommend? Like, for example, the Plextortion, which is basically like a Marshall or the Plexi Drive. What amp do you recommend that to play with? Do you recommend using a real Marshall, or do you want a more neutral amp that's a more flatter response to bring out the pedal? Or, I mean, because, or how does that work with a Fender mm-hmm. amp? I mean, what would you recommend using your pedals, especially those ones that have such a distinctive sound, like even the Pinnacle?
Right. Well, you'll notice on a lot of our pedals, there's a ton of controls.
Mm-hmm.
What that is for, and the reason why I do that, is because I'm trying to make sure it sounds consistent over all the different amp spectrums, whether it's a Vox, whether it's a Marshall or a Fender or a Mesa Boogie or anything in between. So that you'll notice there's always like bright switches and gain switches and 3-band EQs and all this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's just to make it as consistent as possible. So to really kind of answer your question, I really try to make it sound that sound, what it does with any amp. There are some things that won't work, for example. Like if you're running a Pinnacle into, let's say, a PV5150 with a gain dimed, you're just going to get a lot of noise and hiss.
Yeah, okay.
You know, so, yeah. I mean, generally with a distortion or any sort of higher gain pedal, you're generally going to want more of a cleaner bass amp. I don't think it's super important whether it's a black face or an AC30 or anything like that. As long as you can control the EQ on what you're using, I think you can get pretty realistic sounds from it.
But your basic approach is, if I'm correct, is basically using the getting most of your distortion and stuff from the pedal itself and having the amp pretty much clean with maybe a little bit of head of dirt, you know, like a Fender at about 5, you know what I'm saying, where it's just getting a little bit of dirt. Is that
pretty,
your optimum
pretty much,
kind of setup?
Yeah. Yep. And that's just, you know, like I was saying, if you have an amp that has a lot of distortion, you're using it on the dirty channel, you're not really going to want to use a bunch like a distortion pedal in front of a really dirty amp. And when I say dirty, like the 5150A for an example, which has a great gainy sound by itself, but you know, stick a distortion pedal in front of it, and it's going to tend to be pretty hissy and pretty noisy unless it's kind of tailored for that specific thing. And at that point, the sound you're hearing is really more the amp, and the pedal is just clipping the note off. You're not really hearing any EQ or any sort of intricacies of that effect at all.
Right, right. At that kind of distortion, it just kind of, there is no more EQ because it's the frequencies are, you know, you're losing the highs, you're losing the lows. It's getting kind of just a mid-range chunk, so to speak.
Yep. Yeah.
So one of the things I want to talk about is your company, Wampler. There's a lot of things. If you watch the short video on kind of the tour of your company, you talk about. Can we talk about some of the things that you think sets your pedals apart from others? For instance, like you have a JFET tester. You guys actually powder coat in your facility, which I thought was actually pretty unique because usually that isn't the case. And then you have new printers, and then you talk about technology that you've invested in to help. So can we kind of go through some of those and how that makes you unique?
Yeah, I mean, I got to kind of make it a little generic because of trade secret and stuff. But one of the things that makes us really different is the fact that we actually have a facility where, like you said, we do powder coat all our own stuff. We do print all of our own pedals. We have a really killer CNC machine that drills everything out that's perfect every time. We have some other stuff, some other testing procedures that make sure each pedal is consistent from piece to piece. As you said, the JFET tester, which JFET is like a little transistor device, and it measures each one of those JFETs. And we make sure that we use, it's kind of like tubes, very similar to tubes, where, you know, how if you have a tube amp and you use a different tube that's not as high gain, it can sound completely different. But we make sure that our JFETs all have the same gains and EQs. That way each pedal sounds, exactly the same from piece to piece. A big part of what we do is really just making absolutely sure that every phase of building the pedal is as high quality as can be, is as controlled as it can be, and that nothing ever gets out the door that shouldn't get out the door, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. And it's all hand-wired right there in Indiana, right?
Actually, our facility's in Kentucky.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I don't know why I thought you were in Indiana.
Well, our office is in Indiana. It's a very weird and unique situation, but a buddy of mine actually runs the manufacturing facility for me, and just so happens that he lives in Kentucky, and it's a great partnership, and I travel back and forth quite a bit, but he's very, very good at what he does. We work very closely together to make sure everything runs as smoothly as possible, and it just works. It's an odd relationship, but it works.
Now, one of the things, and this may go part back into the JFET tester, but how, when you make pedals, I mean, the one thing that's famous about, you know, looking at old pedals like the Tube Screamer, right, and all those from the early 80s that everybody talks about, it's got to have this particular chip because that chip isn't made and all this. How do you deal with that where when you create a pedal and you want to make sure that the chip you have or the parts that you get are still accessible for when you make future pedals?
That's hard, but I can tell you what we do exactly, and that's buy every ounce of stock we can. For example, we have on our shelves, because they made JFETs obsolete, we bought every ounce of stock we could buy. So we have thousands and thousands of JFETs sitting in a box on our shelf to make sure we can build pedals for the next couple years. When that happens, we're going to have to revisit how, you know, what type of JFET we use. Hopefully we won't have to use a different brand. I think we may be able to use a surface mount part, which is just, it's a little bit smaller basically, and it's soldered on a little differently. But that's, I mean, that's things like that happen all the time, and you really just, you can't plan for it. But when that change comes, you just have to roll with the changes and do the best you can.
And then, so you have, right now you have a line of about 3 signature pedals. So you have a Brad Paisley, Brent Mason, and the other guy's name is slipping my mind right now.
Tom Quell.
Tom Quell, yes. So which one of those, was it the Brad Paisley or the Brent Mason, which were the first?
Brent was first. And that just, that's one of those relationships that started because I was a huge fan of Brent Mason. And, I modified a pedal for him and he was playing a gig in Nashville and went to that gig and gave it to him and he loved it and asked me, you know, if there's anything else I had that he could try. And that kind of led to a relationship where I was building him some prototypes and eventually that landed to building the Hotwired for him.
And so you had an original Hotwired and now you have a slightly different one that's come out, right? With the Hotwired.
Mm-hmm.
So, do you have a Jeff? Or Jeff, do you have a clip of the Hotwired?
Hotwired lap. Yeah, let me play that right now for you. Hold on. There you go.
So the one thing that I think your new modification on this pedal, right, is that it allows you to have your distortion, and then you can have your clean sound mixed with it, correct?
Yeah, it's actually 2 pedals in one. I think that clip was mostly the hotter side. But there's more of a distortion type of side, and then there's more of a lighter gain overdrive side that has the clean blend. So you can blend in your clean signal, and you can get just a little bit of hint of dirt right on your clean signal, or you can run both of those together and get a totally different sound as well. So it's basically almost like 3 different dirt pedals all in one.
It's interesting because one of the first videos I ever saw of Brent Mason was I'm not even sure if it was from somebody in like Russia or something. It might have been on their YouTube channel, but basically he was playing a Gibson Goldtone GA60. Which I'm a huge fan of the Goldtone amps, and so there's hardly any videos of him playing them out there, and so I wonder if this pedal has something to do with those kind of series, because that's one of the things that those amps did, mm-hmm. was that you could actually have your gain channel and then you could have your clean channel mixed together, but you have to have this 5-way button switch that's really tough to get.
Brent didn't really name that amp. But he did tell me that's the sound he wanted. He wanted the sound of, the way he described it was, he wanted the sound of a dirty amp and a clean amp played in stereo. And that way he could, because that's what he does when he plays live, he has 2 amps. And that way he could almost like blend a clean amp in or out. And he also wanted that particular heavier gain overdrive side for more of the rockier bass stuff he does. I mean, that's one of the hard things about being the studio musician that he is because he plays for all different types of bands, not just country. So his rig has to be very versatile.
Yeah, he's a fantastic player, and he's got a quite cool little telly that he's got with the 3 knobs where he can blend in the 3 different pickups, and he's got a humbucker. It's quite a nice little guitar.
I wanted to ask a quick question. How you would define the 3 terms overdrive, distortion, and fuzz? How do you what's the difference?
The way I really do it, and I don't really think this is a textbook explanation. Yeah. It's just the way I kind of define it when customers ask me this. Overdrive would be like a lighter gain. Distortion would be more of a medium to heavy gain. Fuzz would be an over-the-top gain. And usually on fuzz, what sets it apart a lot is that the bass will be boosted before it distorts. On a lot of distortion pedals, you're cutting bass, then distorting, then adding bass back in.
Mm-hmm.
So so really, you could take the same circuit and make it into an overdrive, a fuzz, or a distortion just by changing part values.
Oh, wow. Okay. That makes sense.
Speaking of kind of when we were talking about the Hotwired, one of the pedals I have of yours that I really like, and it's got, I think, a unique feature is the Ego compressor. Mm-hmm. And it's got kind of a similar situation where, you know, most compressors, right, you have those and it's just this nice compressed sound, but you don't have a whole lot of articulation. But your pedal, you allow to blend your original signal in, which mm-hmm. gives you that ability to have the articulation. Mm-hmm. Was that something that you came up with, or was it something you had requested by customers, or?
Kind of a little of both, really. I mean, a lot of studio compressors have that ability to do that already. And that's one of the things that, like, for example, Brent was talking to me about coming up with a compressor like this a long time ago. And that was how he would mention it, is he wanted something that was kind of like a studio compressor. And it's really, I mean, it's as kind of a country player myself, I wanted that as well. You know, I thought that was kind of a cool feature that we could do and do pretty easily. It's pretty simple to add that sort of blend circuit into any effect, really, and just blend the clean signal into it. And the actual compressor style is kind of based off that Ross or Dynacomp type of circuitry. So really, it's that style compressor that can be tweaked completely 100 different ways. You know, with the tone knob and the clean blend. It's becoming a staple in the country music industry, it seems like.
Well, yeah, I mean, I love it. I mean, I had never used too many compressors in my life until, you know, playing with folks around here in LA, and then, you know, everybody has a compressor. I'm like, what does this do? And so then started checking them out, and when I ran into yours at the LA Amp Show, it's, all right, this is the one I'm going to get. So.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, it's very, very cool. Now the one other thing, do we have a clip of the compressor?
Let me find it. Hold on a second. I think it's here. There it is. Okay, here we go. That's pretty nice. That is you get the dynamics with the compression in there. That is a sweet pedal.
Now the pedal that you make that I've been telling Jeff that he needs to check out, and it's one that I've got on my list. It's the in your Faux series, the Faux Analog Echo. Mm-hmm. So when you designed that, what were you trying to mimic with that pedal? What device?
There wasn't really a specific pedal I was really going for, and more of a sound in my head. And that was just that sound of all the different delays I'd had over the years. What I wish they would have done, really, to be honest with you. It can get darker, it can get brighter, it doesn't suck a ton of battery, and it's still true bypass, doesn't affect your tone in any way. It was just really that delay sound I had in my head.
But what's the, compared to your tape echo,
mm-hmm.
how would you recommend either or what would you be your recommendation?
Well, what I did, actually, whenever we had the Faux Analog Echo, and I wanted something that had just some more features on it. So we added modulation on it and added tap tempo on it and increased the time to about 800 milliseconds. So the basic core engine of it is really the same, and the voicing is the same as well. It just has more tricks, I guess you could say. Mm-hmm.
And so the one thing that you talk about with the tape echo pedal, and it may also be with the analog one also, so it's mostly analog with a slight bit of digital in it, correct?
Yeah, basically what it is, your core signal, your guitar signal, stays analog. It never does convert to digital. And then the effect is layered onto the top of it in parallel. So while the effect is actually created digitally, your signal never does get converted.
Was there any challenges dealing with, you know, combining the two in one pedal?
Not really. Not with that particular circuit, no. I mean, the biggest challenge I think I had with that stuff was just getting it to sound like I was wanting it to sound. I'm really, really anal whenever I'm creating stuff like that. So if it's not exactly right, it just drives me crazy until I get that sound out of my head.
Do you have a clip of the tape echo to play?
Which one do you want me to play, the analog or the tape echo?
Let's go with the tape echo. Actually, the tape echo is what I meant to ask you about, because that's the one I really like.
Here we go. let me ask you on that. Can you, if you, I don't know if you deal with a lot of players that use two amps with the Echo, because I use my Echoplex, I would feed the parallel out into the Echo into another amp. Can you isolate the Echo and just have just Echo come out of the pedal so you can send it to another amp?
Unfortunately, with those, you can't, no.
Okay.
No, it's just mono out.
It's mono out. Okay.
Mm-hmm. If I remember, on those, on that pedal, you can actually change Echo to being dark or bright, correct? You can actually change that on it?
Yes. Yes, you can.
Which is a very cool feature.
Yeah, well, actually, the old tape Echoes did roll off a lot. That was one of the complaints when the early digital delays came out. They were great, like with acoustic guitar, because you get all the overtones, but it didn't sound right to a lot of people. They were used to it as the Echoes, like on an Echoplex, repeated, it actually just lower and lower and lower frequency. It was kind of an interesting effect.
So now, can you talk about when you worked with Brad Paisley, how that relationship got started, and then how long it took to create the pedal that he put his name on?
Well, that's actually a very unique situation. I was a huge fan and was at a concert in, I don't even remember the exact year, but I do remember he was touring for his first album. And I had modified a pedal, and I told my wife, I said, I'm going to take this pedal and I'm going to give it to him tonight. She said, how are you going to do that? I said, I'm going to throw it on stage. She said, no, you're not. You're not going to do that. I said, yes, I am. So sure enough, we did. It was a small venue. I think it seated, I don't know, maybe 2,000 people or something like that. And I walked up to as close to the stage I could get and literally threw it up on stage and walked back to my seat. No one ever said anything to me. And then I'm going to guess maybe a week or two later, I was trying to find the guitar tech's name and some sort of way to get a hold of him. And I found out that he was posting on the Telecaster discussion page. It's tdpri.com, I think. And he since has actually works for Visual Sound now. He's gone on and done some different stuff. But he was on there, and I sent him a message and said, hey, I'm the crazy guy that threw a pedal at Brad a couple weekends ago. And he laughed about it and said that Brad did get a chance to try it and liked it. And that really didn't lead to a whole lot until the next show. I went backstage and chatted a bit about Guitar Facts and looked at his rig, and he kind of told me what he wanted and created a few prototypes for him. And it was several years later until he actually had went to a store in California. I don't recall which store it was. I'm going to say it was True Tone, maybe in California, and picked out one of our Echo pedals, I think. And again, I emailed that same tech and said, hey, I just heard that Brad bought one of our Echo pedals. And he confirmed it. And I said, hey, is there anything else he would like to check out? Maybe an overdrive or anything else like that. And he was open to it. So I sent him a couple different things, and we just really built that relationship from there. And I would hear back, he likes this overdrive. What about if you change the mids a little bit, or maybe change the clipping a little bit, all these different suggestions. And finally got a working prototype that he liked and decided to put it into production. So.
I'm going to go ahead and play that now. Here's the Paisley pedal. How would you describe that pedal? I mean, I know you're into, like, a lot of your pedals are emulating certain types of amps and certain types. Mm-hmm. How would you describe that sound?
Well, what I was really going for, I knew all the different overdrives Brad had used. I knew he loved Tube Screamers, so I wanted to go for something that had that Tube Screamer type of mids, but I wanted it to be, I wanted to clip more. I hate to use the word clipping, but that's really what the note's doing. I wanted to distort more like his amps were. When you're standing on stage with Brad when he's sound checking, his amps just sound so good. It's just unbelievable. And I was trying to mimic that type of sound into a little pedal. So it just took a lot of different tweaking and several different prototypes to try to get it there. The version that we finally got, he told me, he said, sounds a lot like my train wreck, because I was really surprised how much it sounds like my train wreck. And he said, we did this in the studio. We A-B'd it with my train wreck, and you can hardly tell the difference between the two. So.
That's a great compliment coming from him.
It was, yeah.
Now, let's talk about the Heritage series. In the Heritage series, you have the Black 65, which is supposed to be a Fender simulation. And in that, you talk about how it took you 9 months to get to where you wanted on it. What kind of issues were you running into to get the pedal that you wanted?
When I'm designing stuff, it's not really like a specific issue, like, you know, I'm trying to figure out an impedance mismatch or anything. It's always just about trying to get it as completely accurate as, for example, the amp I was going for, was two different amps I was really working out of. I was mimicking a twin reverb, which was Brent Mason's, and a deluxe reverb. I wanted something that would kind of do both, and something that would do an over-the-top version of that. And so really, I mean, all those months spent was just trying to just nail it as close as I can. Sometimes little tweaks that like that may be just a specific frequency isn't right. It may need a little bit more 200 hertz, just a little bit. So I may scratch the whole circuit if I can't get that and try a different approach to achieve that. Or there's a million different things that happen in designing pedals. But it's all kind of goes back to just making sure it's as accurate as I could possibly get it.
Now, let's listen to a clip of the Black 65.
How do you differentiate what a twin reverb and a deluxe? What do you hear differently from those two amps?
Really, a twin's going to be obviously more bass. It's going to have more headroom into it, which a pedal kind of negates that sort of thing. But they're kind of a similar palette. But usually the way I describe that is, like, a deluxe is going to be a little bit more boxy. A twin's going to be a little bit more scoop sounding. Mm-hmm. So, with the 3-band EQ on that, you can kind of simulate both of those amps with that.
Okay. Now, the next pedal I want to talk to you about, only out of just simple curiosity, because I'm kind of really getting very curious about Alexander Dumble. the Euphoria pedal. So when you created that pedal, did you have access to a Dumble amp?
Not a real Dumble, no. I had a buddy of mine, actually lives a couple miles away from me, and he's one of those guys who he always is building something, whether it's guitar or whether it's amps or always something like that. And he has a very, very awesome sounding Dumble clone, and I loved the sound of that, but really what I was wanting to approach with the Euphoria was something that would kind of mimic the feel of that, how the notes kind of bloom. They just kind of bloom differently on a Dumble, where they kind of just pop out, for lack of a better way of explaining it. And I wanted to kind of simulate that, but not necessarily like a honking type of mid-range or anything. So I wanted to be as transparent as possible, but still have that kind of feel of playing a Dumble.
I'm going to play the clip. Yeah. Here's the Euphoria. So, I see what you're saying about that kind of bloom to it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Now, one of your new pedals is the Tom Quail Dual Fusion. Can you talk about that pedal and what's unique about that?
Well, with Tom, at the time he was using the Ecstasy and the Euphoria, and he's just an amazing player. What I found out, for what he was doing with it and the type of stuff he plays, he wanted me to change each in a certain way. With the Euphoria, for example, he wanted a little bit less bass. He wanted the gain to react a little bit differently. A little bit tighter of a gain. And maybe not quite so much of that bloom on the bottom end of the notes. On the left channel, he really wanted it to be like a louder version of what we had with the Paisley, but a little bit more, I would say kind of a little bit more of a warmer mid-range and maybe just a little bit smoother type of clipping. So the gain is a little bit smoother than what you'll have on the Paisley Drive.
Let's listen to a clip of the Dual Fusion.
Here's the Dual Fusion.
What's really cool about the Dual Fusion that I love is you can go from the right channel into the left channel, or swap it around and go left channel into right channel, or you can use them both independently and use them like if you have like a looper or any sort of channel changer, you can use them completely independent.
Yeah, the dual pedals like this are just they're pretty nice. I mean, they're just
the channels is always kind of cool. Let me ask you a quick question about these recordings that you supplied us. Are those direct, or are you actually using an amp and miking that?
Those are all mic'd amps.
Mm-hmm. So they're with amplifiers.
Yeah.
Because the sound is, what you're emulating, they're very, 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 very close. It's mind-blowing.
Thank you. I've been told my wife says I have a problem. I'm just so anal about making sure that those sounds are as accurate, to the point of I will wake up in the middle of the night with ideas and worries about, oh man, I wish I would have done something different on that prototype. So it's part of it, I guess.
So quite a few of your pedals are, amp simulators or distortion or gain. You've got a chorus pedal. Talk about that one. Is there any thought in doing like an octave pedal or anything with, I guess that sort of situation?
Yeah, I mean, there's literally I have a whole page full of pedals that we're working on right now. Octave is one of them. There's pitch shifters and there's we just finished another reverb a couple days ago. I don't know when it's coming out, but we did finish the design of that. We were working on yet another delay design today. There's tons of new stuff going to be coming out.
Have you ever thought about doing a Leslie emulator?
Yes, that's another one we're working on as well.
Oh, I'm looking forward to that.
And I mean, I can tell you that while there are a lot of pedals out there that do like that Leslie-ish or vibe-ish sort of thing, I'm having a hard time finding one that does it really, really, really well. And that's one of the things we're having problems with as well. It's just making it as accurate as possible and not letting it just be good enough drives me crazy.
Yeah, well, that's not an easy thing to emulate because, the classic Leslie sound is two speakers rotating differently. It's a different mechanic to it. And, I mean, I've heard, like, the lower rotor emulations are fair. I've heard good ones. But trying to combine the two with the horn, and especially that kind of clipping from the horn, that's not an easy job. I admire you for – that's not something that I don't think anybody's done really successfully yet.
When you stand on a stage with a Leslie and it's loud, it's totally different than playing through any sort of univibe – Tide right. pedal. I mean, Univibe, for lack of using it as a generic way right there. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've never found anything that did that anywhere near as accurately as the actual Leslie unit does, and that's what we're going for.
Mm-hmm. Well, when you work on your octave pedal, this is the one feature I've always been trying to find, and I don't know, and they just put it in your head just in case.
Sure.
The octave above and an octave below, but two foot switches first. You can turn one and off. So you'd have three foot switches, up, down, and a bypass.
Mm-hmm.
I would love to see that on a pedal someday.
That's true. Now, I've never seen that on any pedal.
No, because it's either or, right? And you have to do it with the knobs, so I would love to be able to just turn them on and off. Anyways, just putting that out there.
Yep, it's odd that you would say that, because we were talking about that today, and we talked about the idea of doing just an octave down and an octave up. Or possibly two octaves down and an octave up. I mean, there's different ways we're talking about doing it, but that is kind of the route we're taking as well. So
great. Now we're coming close to the end here. Before we go, we do want to let everyone know, and who's listening, we are going to have a giveaway with one of your pedals, the Slow Stortion. So let's listen to that, and we'll talk about how we're going to give that away.
Here we go. And that's supposed to emulate like a Soldano amp, right? If I'm correct.
That's what I was going for, yeah. When I'm on stage and I'm playing, let's say, through a deluxe reverb, I wanted to be able to have that SLO 100 sound at my feet. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, I really didn't want to have to lug my amp, you know, the amp with me to my little bar gig at the VFW or whatever, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So that's really what I was kind of going for, is that sort of sound in a box.
Well, so for our listeners, make sure to check our Facebook page, and we will let you know exactly how you can win this pedal. We will be having Brian back on after Summer NAMM to talk about a couple of his new pedals, one or two. And when we do that, we'll give away the Slow Stortion, which is probably around July, I believe. So okay. We'll work that out, and we'll just stay tuned to our Facebook page for more details.
So you can have a Soldano to carry with you anytime, a pocket-sized Soldano. That I've played Soldanos. That's really close. I don't know if I could tell if I had an A-B test. I think that would fake me out.
Well, Brian, we definitely want to thank you for coming on the show. I appreciate you taking the time, and especially since it's pretty late for you right now.
It's about midnight where I am, but it's my pleasure. Glad to be here.
We really appreciate it. So, and just to let everyone know, next week we will have Anthony Lucas from Eminence Speakers on, and as I mentioned, we will have a speaker giveaway on that show, and I will be putting together a speaker shootout of a couple of their most popular speakers.
Yes.
I believe the Eric Johnson and their Governor, I believe. So we'll have an Alnico versus Ceramic.
And also what we were discussing tonight, go to WamplerPedals.com. Your website's a very nicely laid out website. I just want to say I could get in there, look at each of the pedals. You have pictures. You have demos. Very, very nice and comprehensive, and it really kind of sets describes you what each one does and what the purpose of each one. I just wanted to mention it to everybody. Check it out. The site's really good.
Yeah, and then you should also become a member, because there's some great PDFs up there that you can get when you're a member.
So, okay.
Well, thanks again, Brian, and that's it. We have all for today. Next week will be Celestion. Coming up in the future, we'll have Taylor Guitars, the band Incendio, Zoom Technologies, and Analog Man, Mike Piero.
Good night, everybody. Thank you so much. Thanks, Brian.
Thank you.